I'm Zach Knickerbocker, founder of 14thFloorApparel.com, and this is my startup story.
Every wildfire began with a spark. Every superhero has an origin story. And every single startup has a moment that they point to as their beginning. And every founder has a purpose that drove them in the midst of all obstacles. That is the startup story. The startup story would not be possible if it wasn't for the support of our sponsor, MoboCash. Move money like a miracle with MoboCash, the free money app that kicks cash. Download MoboCash app on iTunes or Google Play today, and you'll get your slick new Mobo card in the mail. You are no longer dependent upon digital currency alone, but you'll have a card that allows you to purchase at POS stations, restaurants, buy online, anywhere that you want to use your money. No credit check, no credit impact, quick direct deposit, FDIC insured, and free to register and activate. Support our sponsor, MoboCash. Visit mobo.cash or thestartupstory.co/mobocash. This episode marks our fifth startup story. I am humbled by the feedback received through email and Instagram of our listeners sharing how the raw and transparent startup stories of our founders have impacted them. The reason hearing the impact is so meaningful to me is that it validates why I'm doing this. Every single founder had a journey to where they are right now, and that journey is paved with some of the same challenges that you and I face right now. Hearing how they overcame those challenges can give all of us inspiration and real tactics to implement in our own journey. That said, the previous four startup stories were from founders that are all in on their startup from a compensation perspective. This is no longer a side hustle for them. Every founder that we have heard from thus far has achieved some significant level of success that they have left employment and are focused completely on building their dream. Today's episode, we will hear the startup story of an Amazon reseller that is very early in his journey. You see, the startup story is about unpacking the journey of how people overcame various challenges to simply start. I did not want to get too far into the Startup Story podcast episode listings without bringing on a guest that is still building his dream as a side hustle. The key, though, is that he is building his dream. Our guest is Zach Knickerbocker, founder of 14thFloorApparel.com. Zach has discovered one of the numerous ways there are to make money on Amazon. And let me be clear, there are so many ways to make money on Amazon. And there are numerous podcasts for you to listen to if you really want to dive into that ecosystem. Zach's Amazon business is one that nets him a few thousand dollars each month. Yet, what I find most impressive about Zach's story is not that he's achieving some level of success with his brand, or that he has a small tribe on Instagram where he documents his Amazon merch journey. No. What is most impressive to me about Zach is that he has implemented systems in his life to make all of this happen despite his battle with anxiety. In this episode, you will hear real helpful tactics on how to build a business while dealing with anxiety. You will learn how significant it is to have a very powerful purpose to what you are trying to build. You will receive some action items on how to get started in the Amazon merch space. Where are you in your journey? Do you have a notebook full of ideas that you want to build but need to stay gainfully employed and therefore hesitant to move on anything? Or maybe you're in need of capital to move on your idea, and hearing from Zach can help you make some progress in that direction. You see, Zach's very early startup story is one that shows how small daily victories can build into a very significant opportunity. In fact, Zach's entrepreneurial journey starts back when he was just 13 years old, when he started building an online platform that ultimately paid for his college degree.
I distinctly recall this moment when I was 10, you know, something like that, very young. We were driving in the family car. You know, first of all, both of my parents are just, they work 9 to 5. They're not entrepreneurs. But we're driving in the car. We're coming back from a visit to sort of extended family. And this particular extended family member owns a big concrete business, or at least his parents do. And I remember thinking, like, and specifically asking my dad, how did he get all of his money? Because I was quite envious of the fact that they're rich, they have a nice house, and it just seemed great. And you know, he explained to me the concrete business and how people can make money. Pointed out this website, I think it was called Crazy Aaron's Putty or something like that. There might be some people out there that remember it. This guy that just sells putty online, and you know, just kind of explained to me the concept of how you can create a product and sell it. And I think that's the first memory I have and the first sort of memory of like infatuation with success. And then the other distinct memory is when I was 13, I was playing this game. It was a Disney game. And I wanted to start a fan site after seeing somebody else do it. And my dad helped me set that up. And then I sort of just ran it. I built it and created the community around it, created content, grew the community, all that stuff from roughly 2013 to 2018. And that community grew quite large. We had Google ads on it, and I sort of learned how to make money online. I got the money to pay for college. It was just like a nice, small initial success. And it, you know, it sounds like paid for college, got hundreds of thousands of dollars. No, I mean, it's just, it's a state college. This is like $500 a month income, but it was awesome at the time as a kid.
I mean, yeah, you were eight, you were at 17, or how old were you when you started it?
13.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's, yeah, I mean, obviously probably 13, you weren't making $500 a month, but either way, 16, $500 a month, just doing something online. That's fantastic.
I sincerely credit it as the luckiest thing that's ever happened to me, just in terms of the experience I got from that and the perspective and just a lot of maturity that came out of it. But at the same time, you know, it was a lot of hard work. Like, you know, I didn't spend as much time with friends. I didn't have high school girlfriends. I didn't do any of that stuff. Like, I was working on it every night. So
that's awesome. So you mentioned your parents were not entrepreneurs. What did they do?
So my mom is, she works for a company that does hotel reviews.
Okay.
Like anonymous. So like they'll have people call in to the hotel and, or no, I'm sorry. They will work as sales callers. Like, so they'll call the hotel and like try and book a room and then get feedback about how well the hotel is handling bookings and stuff like that. Best way I can describe it. My dad is a software developer. He works for a big software firm. So my actual career path now is as a software developer during the day. So that's where a lot of that influence came from.
Okay. So you're current, just for clarity for the listeners, how old are you again?
I am 26.
26. And if I'm not mistaken, per your Instagram, you turn 27 very soon.
And, yeah,
and for those that that want to follow you on Instagram, what is your handle?
Zach Knickerbocker.
And by the way, his last name is Knickerbocker and he lives in New York. So for the longest time, I wasn't quite sure if that was a real name, but that is his real name. And it couldn't be more perfect for where he's planted right now. So you're raised by a software developer. You were raised by a hotel review manager, office managerial position for your mother. And your mom, or I'm sorry, your dad helped you with your Disney fan site when you were 13 out of a fascination for really independent success is what I'm assuming is what it was with your family members' concrete business on just how they can control their own destiny. What were some of the things that at 13, there's a lot of just general affinity that takes place for a 13-year-old, right? Like, I'm a fan of this game. But what was it that drove you to want to create a fan site though?
I've always kind of liked creating. That's another thing that if I think back, so for example, we had these blocks when I was a kid that connect together. I don't recall exactly what they were called, but they're just plastic blocks that connect kind of like Legos. One of the early things I remember doing is creating game consoles and other like products that I was infatuated with at the time out of these blocks and just kind of pretending like I was a factory creating things.
That's awesome.
I don't know why. It was just fun. Another example is like I would use those really early game creator software that you could find online and create really simple games. And one that I created, I packaged it onto a disc somehow and put it into like a CD-ROM holder and like made some cover art and then like packaged that like a product that I was selling. There's multiple examples like that. I used to make movies with like the old software that would come on Windows where you can like edit videos just really simply, and I'd make movies. So just anytime I get the chance to like create a product, I seem to like that for some reason.
That's awesome. So you're 13, you start this. Let's say you're 18, you're making a few hundred bucks a month on this Disney fan site. Sounds like you had some leaning towards software development as a career path. Where were you thinking mentally as far as what your long-term game plan was, right? I mean, we're talking 10 years ago, so I'm sure you could probably remember this. But what was your long-term game plan as you were coming to the end of high school?
100%. It was just to get a software job. I hadn't thought about really like what would fulfill me, you know, 40 years down the line. But I don't think there's anything in my head beyond just having a job in software for my life.
So when did you start having that entrepreneurial itch, right? You obviously jump into college, the fan side's paying for college, but when did you start getting that itch to like, you know, I don't know if I want to do this as my 40 plus hours or for my career?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it was roughly 4 years ago, I would say. And I think that the thing I can remember pushing me toward it was watching these fitness influencers on YouTube. At the time I was getting into the gym and I was watching these guys to kind of figure out, you know, how to do it.
Yeah.
And one of the things that every one of them did was they would start clothing lines and then sell that clothing to their followers. Mm. Some of them would have like pre-workouts and other sorts of products, but bottom line is they're creating products and selling them. And really, it just looked trendy to me. Like, I thought it would be cool to do that sort of thing in the same way that I thought it'd be cool to start a fan site. I hadn't really thought about like, oh, I should jump into this as a new career, go into entrepreneurship. I really just wanted to sell product for the sake of selling it. Like,
yeah.
I remember how cool it would be to like take stuff to the post office, you know, and just ship it off to people en masse.
That's awesome.
So I think that was probably it.
What, you said that was about 4 years ago. So you were 23, we'll say. And just for clarity, you're still working a software development job and your side hustle, which I know, I'm assuming your goal is to make it a full-time endeavor, is custom merchandise, correct? Specifically shirts, I'm assuming.
Shirts, yep.
Yep. So how did you get started in that? So you see these fitness people, they're making their merch. Let's walk through that process of how did you get to when you were shipping your first shirt?
Yeah, so it's actually a really slow process if you want to walk through the whole thing. It's not quite like just going crazy.
Let's not go in real time, but let's walk through what your process was.
I think this is actually pretty valuable. It's like I spent a good year and a half probably, right? Like just wanting to sort of get into selling stuff, but doing like literally nothing. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I would spend the nights sort of like watching motivational videos and then, you know, halfway through the night transition to playing a game and like feeling sorry for myself and like saying, I'll get to it tomorrow. I'll figure it out. I distinctly remember at some point I realized like as I'm walking through shops in real time, I can see the products on the shelves and I can kind of see like manufacturer tags on them. And like I started starting to connect the dots that I can like source products in the same way that person can. Like there's nothing special about what that person's doing with their shop. I can do it as well. And so I set a goal for myself and the goal was, all I need to do is make $10 in the next month and I'm happy. Like that's my very simple goal. And so what I did is I went out to Amazon.com and I just looked around and tried to find a product I could flip. In this case, it was one of those classic Nintendo Entertainment Systems. Mm-hmm. So this wasn't too long ago. This was like 2 years ago. I bought it. I flipped it on eBay because at the time it was really rare and I made my $10. That's all I made for the month. And then the next month I went for $20 and following month I went for I think 40 and just kind of built it up. And so this was pre-shirts. Like I was just trying to, you know, flip some stuff online.
Yeah.
And
it's
since then that I've sort of fallen into shirts as something I like.
So let's walk through that flipping because I don't think a lot of people know about that as a business opportunity. And for those that aren't aware of the idea of product flipping, you know, Gary Vaynerchuk talks about swap meeting all the time. I mean, this guy's worth, you know, millions. And for anyone who follows Gary Vaynerchuk, he just recently is just obsessed with how much money can be made in swap meeting and putting it online for sale. So there's money to be made everywhere. In fact, I think Gary had a, was it a $5,000 challenge? I think it was something the effect that for a month, he just kind of vlogged his entire swap meeting endeavor and he made like $5,000 in 1 month just swap meeting, right? And so you're flipping product via Amazon to eBay. How did you even think to do that? Because I don't think most people would think that I could buy a product on Amazon and then sell it for a profit on eBay. I think most people tend to think that most people do shopping on Amazon, so I'm not going to find product on Amazon that I can flip on eBay. Like how did you come across that concept?
Yeah, the thing I came across was Gary Vee, actually.
Okay.
At the time, he had a 2017 flip challenge. Have you heard of that?
I have not heard of that, no.
Yeah, so he was on like the Breakfast Club and had this crazy idea called the 2017 Flip Challenge. And the idea behind it is that for the year of 2017, his challenge was for anybody to go out there and flip product and make, I think it was like $20,170. So you have that 2017 theme. And he just kind of explained like the basics, which is like, go out there, find something from a garage sale, from eBay, from Amazon, wherever you can, and then turn around and flip it like closer to retail price to make a little money. And so I think like the classic Nintendo Entertainment System was just kind of coming out at the time. That was really the impetus, not so much like going to Amazon and like searching for something.
Yeah.
I just knew that this thing was rare and Amazon was a good place to buy it. So.
So Gary Vee influencing another entrepreneur. I love that.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things you said before we talk about your transition from, you know, flipping from Amazon to eBay and moving into shirts and designs and all that. One of the things you said about the early part of that is you had the desire, but not the motivation to do anything. What was that mental state for you? Like, why were you cognizant of the idea that I want to do something, I'm just going to play video games? What was the dialogue in your head? Were you like, what was that conversation you had with yourself?
I think I've always found it really easy to procrastinate. Like, I've always been a pretty big procrastinator. So that's certainly a big part of it. One way I've found to counter that works really well, and this may just be a skill that I developed during this time, but it was to set really small goals, which is kind of counter to what a lot of people do. But it really works for somebody who's having trouble getting started and procrastinates or whatever, because it's pretty easy to achieve a small goal if you set it small enough, and it builds that momentum. But yeah, the mindset, I mean, I deal with it today for sure. Like, it's the only reason I get through my day and be productive is by building systems to keep me productive, which is like, you know, I have this to-do list process that works really well for me, and I plan monthly, and Instagram's a huge part of like forming that social pressure, right? Like I tell people I'm doing things and I am doing things, and I can't just stop, because that's a big part of it. But all of this just snowballs. And I think this whole entrepreneurial journey has been kind of forming that.
If you were to think back now, you're talking to someone, you're mentoring them, maybe you're a coffee shop in downtown New York, whatever the case may be, but someone's saying, you know, I just want to do something. Like I want to create, I want to pay for college, whatever their objective is for wanting to do something. What do you say to them? You know, having gone through, I mean, again, you're still early on in your entrepreneurial journey, but what do you say to them as far as just the getting started part?
Well, certainly one thing that kind of speaks to the previous question as well is finding a really solid why. It's kind of cliche. I don't think about it too often, but I think there's really something to it, because it is baked deep into what I do. And you know, every successful person out there talks about it. And my why is simply like, I really want to be in the financial position to, one, cure my anxiety. Anxiety is something that myself and many people struggle with. And then two, be in the financial position to take care of my parents and my family, no matter what happens. If any sort of medical issue comes up or some sort of problem befalls us. So that's a really strong why.
I mean, those are.
It's almost like, it feels more like an obligation and a responsibility than like a pursuit of wealth or anything like that.
Yeah.
It's really like, I don't have an option. It's just figuring out how to get it done, because it needs to get done.
Yeah. Man, one, thank you for being so transparent in that, you know, and I know just from my own personal experience within my network, not myself, but within my network, how prevalent anxiety and depression is among entrepreneurs, even longtime entrepreneurs, not even just new ones. And sometimes they kind of get in a spiral, and it's hard for them to get out of it. You know, so I think there's a reason we are talking today as someone of yourself who has got anxiety and has goals and ambitions. How do you manage that with the goals and ambitions that you have? Like, what systems do you have in place? And very specifically, tactically, for the listener right now who is thinking to himself, like, oh my gosh, he just said anxiety. Like, how does he do what he does with the hours he has? Like, that would just break me. What systems do you have that are working for you that someone might be able to leverage?
Yeah, first of all, like, some super advice I have to give, if you're okay with it, is to listen to Tom Bilyeu.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Okay.
And Quest Nutrition, right? And he's got some really amazing ideas about how to kind of like transform your mindset, train your mind.
Do you know the name of his podcast?
Yeah, it's called Impact Theory.
Impact Theory. Okay. I'll make sure I include that in the show notes.
Yeah. And that's been transformative for me. That's an incredible podcast for this sort of thing. And so, I mean, like, as a whole, any sort of like mindset is huge. I spend a lot of time trying to fix my mindset. I'm very cognizant of my shortcomings, and I've made a lot of progress that's very evident, like in improving my mindset. And I think that's important because a lot of that feeds into anxiety. You know, mm-hmm. if you're beating up on yourself every day, that just makes it worse. As far as other tactical things, I find anything I can do to make me feel more confident is important. So one of those things is like getting better at dieting and getting to the gym and just kind of making my body something that I'm proud of. Mm-hmm. It's very important for me. Similarly, I try and get up early, which is very hard and something I've always struggled with. Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad, but you know, overall I try and get up early. And I find that gives me the confidence in the morning to have a good day. And it's like everything else, like all these things just build on themselves. Another thing to help with confidence in a sense, but just overall, like feeling like I've accomplished things, is I have this to-do list system, which I stole from Andy Frisella's, I forget what he calls it, but the idea is basically you write down three things for the day that you need to get done. And they're very simple things. Like they're not supposed to take you 8 hours. They're just things that need to happen. Yeah. And if you do them all, you've written them down. Once you do them all, you put a little W on the page. And if you don't, you put an L and you feel pretty bad about it. But whenever I get to write that W, which is hopefully pretty often, it feels really good. And so, you know, when you're working out and you're getting up early and you're improving your mindset and you're like getting stuff done every day and writing those W's, like it's just all these things that compound, and it builds like a sort of impenetrable base to help keep you out of a bad mindset.
That's awesome. I hope for all of our listeners that they kind of struggle with that struggle with anxiety or really even just negative narrative in their mind. You know, I hope everyone got some great tactics in there on that. So you're keeping momentum going. You're getting up early. You're taking care of things mentally and physically you need to take care of. You're flipping. You're getting some little successes on buying on Amazon, selling on eBay. How long were you doing that before you realized, I'm going to start creating my own brand and start building merch around that?
Like maybe 9 months into the process of selling stuff online, I was introduced to Amazon merch, which is sort of what enables me to create these t-shirts. The technology, I don't know how important it is to dive into it, but it sort of makes it really easy to create one-off shirts, where in the old world, the screen printing process requires these giant runs of shirts, you know, hundreds, thousands to be economical. Amazon merch and any other business like it enables designers like me, people with any sort of design ability, to create t-shirt designs and then sell them one-off through Amazon's massive organic marketplace. So I got introduced to that through a podcast, and it was really easy to just start up on the side. And as time went on, merch got bigger. I couldn't manage FBA and merch at the same time. FBA is the physical products stuff. And eventually I just made the decision to switch to merch full-time.
So for those that, and I too am not fully versed in all the different ways there is to make money on Amazon. But it is mind blowing to me how many layers of monetization there is in Amazon. And for those that are listening, I'll include some show notes to a few podcasts. There's an Amazon sellers or Amazon resellers. I think it's Amazon sellers podcast that I try to listen to. And it's just, it blows every time. I'm just blown away at like how many different ways there is to make money on Amazon, how big the industry is. I mean, it boggles my mind. To be honest, Amazon merch had no idea about until this conversation right here. I knew about FBA and everything. I was like, here's a whole nother way to make money via Amazon. So can you unpack merch and FBA for our listeners? For those that are thinking, wait, there's still money to be made in Amazon? The answer is yes. This is not that podcast to talk about all, you know, how much of an opportunity there is in Amazon. But can you just unpack those two, since you mentioned them, on what they are and how can someone make money in those two verticals?
Yeah, for sure. So it's hard to turn off the lingo. I'll do my best. At a high level, the thing that makes Amazon great for all these opportunities is that it's huge. And, you know, I think like 50% of all internet sales went through it last year or something insane. So they provide various ways to sell your product on Amazon and leverage all this organic traffic, which is what's really allowing you to make so much money. The first thing I mentioned, FBA, is Fulfillment by Amazon.
Okay.
And that's an opportunity they provide where you can ship all of your physical product to their warehouses. and then list that product for sale on Amazon.com. And whenever a sale happens, the business for Amazon is that they'll handle all of the fulfillment complexities for you, right? So actually shipping the item out to the customer is done through their warehouse. Any sort of customer service, returns, Amazon takes care of it all. And that cost just gets bundled up into a monthly fee for you for using FBA. And so you can sell anything you want. You can sell books, DVDs, you know.
But you're shipping the product to them.
Yep.
Got it. Okay. So for you,
the middleman between you and the customer.
Okay. So for you, you were making the shirts outside the Amazon system in some quantity and shipping them to FBA for
inventory. Oh, no, sorry. This is pre-shirts. So this is like when I'm doing that flipping. Yeah.
Got it. Okay. Okay. So then what is the merch side of Amazon?
Yeah. So merch is a very recent program they launched and it's totally separate from FBA. And there are other programs than FBA and merch. So we're just covering a sort of segment of them.
But yeah, we could spend multiple podcasts on all the ways there is to make money. So tons. This is just merch and FBA.
Yep. And so merch is powered by sort of a technology called print on demand. Mm-hmm. And what that refers to is there's these giant printers you can buy. They're the size of cars. They cost $40,000. It's not really practical for someone like me to have one of these and be producing shirts. But they use a technology that allows you to literally print a design onto a shirt, which means you can just make a run of one shirt. And then when you print the next shirt, it can be a totally different design and it's very economical. Mm-hmm. And this is brand new in the past, you know, 5 or 10 years in terms of actually being used for real businesses. And so what Amazon did is they bought a ton of these printers, right? Like they've got hundreds or whatever. I don't actually know. And what Amazon Merch, the program, allows you to do is to create designs and then list those designs on t-shirt mockups, essentially on Amazon.com. And when a customer places an order, that shirt gets printed in Amazon's facilities on these giant car-sized printers and then shipped out to the customer. And just like FBA, you haven't touched any of the fulfillment or customer communication or anything like that. All you've done is created the design and Amazon's taking care of the rest. Then you just get paid a royalty for the use of that design.
Got it. So you said that you couldn't keep up with merch. You had to get rid and FBA at the same time. So you had to get rid of your FBA, which was the products you were flipping. So obviously that means merch is doing well. You've been doing this now for 2 years, I believe.
Like a year and a half on merch.
Year and a half on merch. Is it meeting your expectations?
I mean, so my expectations aren't huge. Like I haven't cracked the, you know, 100K a year barrier yet with entrepreneurship. Really, there's so much to learn still. Like going through this initial couple of years has taught me so much about accounting and starting a business and what it means to, you know, hire help and build a team, however big it is. And really, like this year and a half with merch, you know, I haven't made a ton of money, like I said, but it's taught me so much. Like I don't feel as though it's slow or less than I expected. It's just, I'm not sure I really knew what to expect in the first place. Mm-hmm. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
And definitely like even in the past month, you know, I've slowly become even more awoken to places I can take this in terms of starting up stores that are standalone from Amazon and different like brand ideas for niches that I can go into and sort of grow out. So it's an ever evolving process of sort of like figuring out not only what I want in a business, but what's even possible.
What do you see for, I mean, I'm thinking to myself, you know, you said you haven't broken the 100,000 barrier. And immediately I thought to myself, there's probably a listener out there that is probably wondering, well, why keep going? You've been at this 2 years now, you're working a 9-to-5. Why keep pushing on this?
Okay. So there's a reasonable answer and there's a crazy answer. I think the reasonable answer is that I can see the progress, right? Like year to year, month to month, even week to week. You know, there's some good weeks, some bad weeks, but it's like some weeks, man, I just have these just create, you know, like I'll create a shirt that just like starts selling like crazy and I get all sorts of newfound confidence or I find some personality that like really inspires me and I get all sorts of new tips or whatever. So, you know, you're always kind of seeking that next golden nugget. You're always kind of feeling like, why stop now? I'm making progress. And then you always feel like when you really introspect that if you just keep going, like you'll hit the jackpot eventually. You'll get to your goal eventually. Which, you know, I don't know if there's any truth in that, but again, every successful person says that it's, you know, years and years and years of grind and failure. So every extra year of failure and slowness is just one step closer to the goal.
Oh man, I love that mindset. So what's the crazy answer?
Because it's assured, it's guaranteed. Like all you have to do is just suffer long enough and you'll get what you want. It's assured. It's the most sure thing out there.
That is true. All statistics, when it comes to promotional products, apparel is number one every single time. So
yeah, it's a good business.
Yeah.
And then the crazy thing, right, is like I have this sort of like vision of one day standing on a stage and talking about how I went through like 10 years or whatever of just failure and problems. I don't even consider anything I've done failure, but it's, you know, I just think it'd be super cool to be able to stand up there, have success, and be able to just tell people like the crazy journey you went on. So every extra week is more of that journey.
What I love about both of those answers, besides the fact that they're honest and authentic to you, is some people just quit too early, period. And you know, some people would, you know, probably say the standing on stage is the reasonable answer and the progress is the crazy answer because people want success so quickly, right? So for those listening, what I hope that they're hearing is that, like you said, you know, you keep hearing from successful entrepreneurs that it's years in the making, right? Everyone sees the result that they're seeing now, whether it be on Instagram or Twitter or wherever, they're seeing the result now, but they didn't get to see any of the backstage action. And so I just absolutely commend you and applaud you for staying the course and staying in the game. And for those listening, I don't care what amount of traction or traction you're not getting, stay the course. Now, that said, if it's not working, be intelligent, pivot where necessary. Don't keep running into a wall thinking at some point you're just going to break through that wall. I mean, unless you have a rather large dome and you're hard-headed, then you will get to that wall. But most people don't do that. So let's talk about your path to the stage, right? Do you see it being shirts? Do you see adding product lines? What do you see for yourself, let's say, in another 2 years? What do you see for yourself?
I think it's definitely apparel related. But I don't think that too seriously either because when I started FBA and I was doing this product flipping, like I legitimately thought I was going to scale up a product flipping business, you know, have a warehouse and products and be moving all sorts of money. And then I found merch and it turned out I like that more. So, you know, I'm super open to the idea that I'll just find something else that I like more and grow that instead. But for the moment, you know, shirts is kind of all I can see.
There's just so many ways to make money on Amazon. It just blows my mind away. And I think that's why I was drawn to your story via Instagram. One, just because you were documenting your journey. It's so compelling to me. One, your transparency. Two, it was so early stage. And, you know, a couple episodes ago, we hear from the founder of Veridesk, and they're a global company shipping to 30 countries every single day. You know, we talked with the founder of E! Entertainment Television, selling it for billions of dollars, coming from the sewers to the billions. Like, it's unbelievable. You know, and we talked to Doc Jen Fid, who's got Instagram following the hundreds of thousands, and she's got so much influence in the mobility and fitness space. And then people tend to chalk it up like, oh, well, yeah, I understand that's where they got, but how did they, you know, I don't see myself starting that way. And I love your story because of where it has it, where it is in the journey. It's early. And, you know, and in another year, we're going to follow up with your journey to see the progress that's been made. Because I'm confident based on the year and a half or so I've been following you on Instagram, I'm confident the journey is going to stay. I definitely see your why is big enough. I would love to see you on stage somewhere talking about your successes and your challenges. So now when you are 2 years in, what has been your greatest challenge?
You know, time management is a big part of it, right? Because I do work my 9-to-5 job. And I hate calling it 9-to-5 because it kind of has this like derogatory tone to it. Like, oh, I hate my day job. I actually love my day job a lot. It's very demanding. I actually work at Amazon, if you can believe it. I'm a software developer there.
Oh, really?
So yeah.
That's awesome.
just to mention that, you know, none of this is, these are all my own opinions and everything, but I'm a software developer at Amazon and it's a great job. I love it. And so sort of balancing the time demanding aspects of that and then being able to come home and like take the 4 or 5 hours at the nighttime that I have to really focus in on these hustles and try and scale anything on the side is quite hard. And especially coming from that very like just American middle class, get a job, go to work, come home mindset, like transforming from that to this is, it's been a challenge. Like it's hard.
Yeah. What I have to ask, because I didn't realize you worked at Amazon. Are there lots of Amazonians that, I don't know if that's what you're called as an employee, but it worked for me right now. Are there lots of Amazonians that have Amazon hustles like yours?
If there are, I don't know them. Like I tend to be the local expert on anything seller related because I'm like the one dude that actually has done it.
Okay. That's awesome. So what, for those listening that are thinking to themselves like, well, like I have this, because I'm thinking to myself like, man, you know, this is interesting because I've had a few startups in my career and to varying levels of success, and each one had funding in the early stage a different way. I'm thinking to myself, huh, Amazon's a unique way to get that funding for another startup that I have, especially in the Amazon merch thing, especially with the Amazon merch. What are some learnings you experienced in the early days that you could pass on to our listeners that might be thinking, huh, I could do X, Y, and Z in the merch or FBA space to help fund a different dream that I have? What are some learnings you have for those people?
I think one of the biggest learnings is to really seek out that opportunity. Oh yeah. So one particular thing that's come up in the merch community recently that I've not really seized on because I tend to focus on the organic traffic side of things is to find restaurants, any sort of local business that would traditionally have a need for merch, right? So for example, the employees at a restaurant probably are wearing a shirt that has the restaurant's name on it. If you have like a pizza shop or something, maybe they have like a shirt with their logo that they're selling to customers or something. And the catch there is that all of these businesses, when they order those shirts, they need to order them in big runs. So they'll have to order like 100 extra smalls, 100 smalls, 100 mediums, even though they might have 20 or 40 employees, because all these shirts are created with screen printed processes, which requires doing things in bulk. If you look into screen printing, it just does. And so the catch here is that with print on demand, you can do things on demand one shirt at a time. And these businesses don't realize it. And in fact, you know, it's actually hard to work with all these systems. So that's one opportunity right there. Like people are scaling up to $1 million businesses right now. There are multiple examples of people doing it just by going to these businesses and saying like, hey, rather than doing the screen printing thing you're doing, just come through us and we'll just, you know, give you shirts on demand at a slight premium in price or whatever. And so that's one example. You know, a simpler example is like the local baseball team also needs shirts and they're also going through screen printing companies. And there's a lot you can do there just in terms of like being a familiar face and saying you'll do it for them, or helping with the cost by going through print on demand, which this is all stuff you can do with Amazon merch, by the way.
Yeah.
So like, I like that sort of stuff because it's something that a lot of people connect pretty easily with. Like it's probably easy to think of something you've seen recently where people needed a shirt. But beyond that, if you're passionate about like some sort of hobby, like something, you know, super, super niche, like pinball, like this pinball machine behind me, there are people out there that also love pinball and they're buying shirts. And again, because like screen printing is not great for like super niche, low run shirt type things, print on demand is exposing this great opportunity to create shirts for this group of hobbyists that haven't really had a huge selection to choose from in the past.
That's awesome.
So I think that's the biggest opportunity right now with shirts.
So those are some incredible opportunities for our listener. So for our listeners out there that want to bite on some of those opportunities, and they want to pick up a design, they want to collaborate with a local baseball team or whatever the case may be. But either way, they want to move forward in this because they're like, hey, this could fund a different dream that I have, a different idea that I have, or maybe just a short-term goal that they have in order to accomplish something else. What are some practical tips and learnings that they should know about going into this?
Yeah, the biggest thing is just that originality is very important. Merch is somewhat low barrier to entry, and it's pretty common for people to create designs that are either using like, or they're using a font for which they don't have a premium license, There's all sorts of things out there where, like, with art, you need to have the license to use it, or you need to create something totally original. And especially when you're selling on a platform like merch, where Amazon has some liability, you just can't infringe on IP. And so originality is important. And then certainly when you're looking at other sellers, like, you can't just go and be doing something that's a direct ripoff of another seller. You know, it's bad for the community. It's a potential IP problem. So again, like, originality is of central importance to this.
Well, how did your first sale come across? You said you focus on organic. How did you get that first one? I mean, did you literally just post your design and a sale came in?
Yeah, pretty much. It wasn't quite so simple. I mean, it takes a long time to actually learn what's going to sell. You're probably more naive than you think, actually, in terms of, like, what you think would sell to an audience. But it's a learning process like any other. Like, I think I threw up a shirt and it didn't do anything, and I threw up, like, a couple more, and, like, finally one bit, and you're like, okay, that's some positive feedback. I sort of see that works. And you go create more, and you listen to podcasts, and you sort of, like, figure out slowly from other people who have succeeded what kinds of shirts work, and you just get your like, inner sense for how to market products nailed down. And I think that's actually, not to diverge too much, but that's one skill I've picked up from with merch, is being able to, like, effectively identify, like, segments of customers and niches and sort of know what they want and be able to create t-shirts for those things. It's a good skill. It expands to a lot of businesses.
Absolutely, it does. Understanding audience segments. So you've referenced a few resources that you use for learnings, right? And we'll call them mentors, even though maybe you haven't met them, but you've listened to their podcasts, read their books, watched their content on YouTube, whatever the case may be. Who are, like, if you were to think back now, like, these people played such a key role with where I am today. Again, you're early stage, but they've played such a key role in where you are right now. Who are those people and where are the resources? And I want to include them in the show notes.
Yeah. Number one, I mean, we've kind of covered him a little bit, so I hate to be repetitive, but Gary Vaynerchuk was huge, right? Like, I still listen to him now and then, but for a while there, I was listening to him like an hour or two every day. And that was really important for, like, establishing that sort of hustle mindset and the motivation to get things done and realize sort of, like, the potential and everything. Tom Bilyeu with Impact Theory he might actually be number one, honestly. Because so much of even what I do at work today and in my regular life is influenced by a lot of the stuff he talks about. And I mean, he's just straight up cured parts of my anxiety, like, for sure.
That's awesome.
It's really powerful stuff. As a third, I think, you know, Andy Frisella has always been someone that's really up there for me, just because he's very no nonsense and sometimes you just need a kick in the butt, and Andy Frisella gives you that for sure. And then one guy that's always been a good friend and helped a lot with the flipping, he's huge in the community, he's certainly had an influence on me, is Reezy Resells.
Oh yeah, okay. I've just recently started following him. Yep. So I'll make sure I include links to all of those resources and make sure they understand the little shout out you gave them right there. I guess lastly, when we think about the people that are just reluctant to move on their dreams. I'm not even saying anxiety related or anything. They just don't have enough belief to move forward, but they still have that dream and vision for whatever it is, whether it be to take care of their parents, whether it be to have tremendous wealth, whether it be to just contribute more to nonprofits, whatever their reason or their why is, but they just have so much self-doubt in moving forward. What do you say to those people?
Well, personally, I sell them to go make $10 in a month.
Like, there you go.
A lot of people aren't willing to set such a small goal. And I think a lot of people see make $10 in a month, and they're like, of course I can do that. But I really think that just initial victory is so important for establishing, like, oh crap, like, I can do this. Because once you do $10, you know, $20 looks that much more attainable. And if you're willing to have a little humility and accept that it's going to be slow and it's going to take a while, but you can actually do it if you build slowly like that.
Yeah,
that's what works for me. You know, I don't know if it works for everybody, but it's been really powerful for me.
The Anxiety and Depression Association of America estimates that approximately 18% of American adults deal with some level of anxiety. While this is not something that I personally deal with, I have people in my life that do. So hearing Zach's story about perseverance and discipline in his business to keep his anxiety in check is inspiring and one that I will be sharing with a few people very close to me. And that is the beauty of the startup story. There are so many incredible founder stories out there that can be of encouragement and motivation for another individual who has dreams and aspirations of starting a business. Maybe Zach's story of his early stage startup is one that would be exactly what someone in your community or network needs to hear right now. What do you have in your life that you need to develop systems for in order to move forward? Maybe you battle with an internal dialogue that has you believing you're not capable of starting a business. Maybe your health patterns are so poor that you don't have the energy you need to put in the hours you should to make your dream a reality. Or maybe you've had so many failures in your life that you now just keep things a secret from others out of fear of rejection or embarrassment. Whatever challenge or obstacle you have in your life, follow Zach's lead and develop a system to overcome that challenge or obstacle. You will not defeat that challenge or obstacle without being intentional in your approach. The reason I can state that with full assurance is because we, both you and I, are surrounded by a culture of mediocrity, a culture that loves being average. We love the participation trophies and we wear the mantra of bare minimum like it's a merit badge. The masses settle for good enough and all of that bleeds into how we do things, unless we are intentional about pushing ourselves to new heights. And here's the great news. The fact that you're listening to the Startup Story podcast should tell you that you are not average. You are not the norm. You're here pursuing growth because you know you are capable of more. You know that you have it in you to move on that idea you have for a business or product. Keep pushing forward. Develop a system that works for you and don't stop. See, Zach has put himself out there with his goals and ambitions and documents it on his Instagram at Zach Knickerbocker. Z-A-C-H Knickerbocker. There's a link in the show notes. Show some support to him by following him. In fact, I would also like to challenge you with an action item. Send me a video DM on Instagram at thestartupstory.co and tell me what challenge or obstacle is holding you back from moving forward. If you do that, I promise you that I will reply with a few ideas of systems that you might consider to put in place to make forward progress. I will continue to say it. Entrepreneurs help other entrepreneurs. The Startup Story community has been so incredible with sharing our podcast with others. But we have more stories to tell and more people to reach. We are a startup, and the most powerful way you can support the Startup Story podcast is to leave a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram at thestartupstory.co. Share the Startup Story on your social media, either with a link or a screenshot. Make sure you tag or mention us at thestartupstory.co so we can see your help and say thank you for it. And lastly, share the podcast on your LinkedIn profile. The Startup Story is for entrepreneurs, so please do not underestimate the power of sharing the Startup Story on your LinkedIn profile so other entrepreneurs can discover us. In fact, most people struggle to share good content on LinkedIn anyways. So if you want to support the Startup Story, then search for the Startup Story company page, follow us, and share our posts to help encourage other founders and spread the word about the podcast. Every single founder has a story, and the startup stories we bring to you every week can encourage and inspire another founder. It might just be what they needed to hear to keep moving forward on their dreams. I look forward to sharing these stories every Tuesday with hopes to inspire you to start your story.